there's what we're seeing is this continuous, what we call GDPRization, where every country is sort of lifting their standards eventually to GDPR levels. And so Australia, the Privacy Act, it's always been a bit better or worse, depending on your viewpoint. In terms of fines, it used to be 2.5 million for a serious or repeated interference. And as you say, that's now lifted to 50 million, which is actually a phenomenal change. And it's much higher than the GDPR, which I find really surprising.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for listening in. This is the final episode of Upwards podcast for this year. This is our 12th episode. And I've got a special guest back with me, who is also our first guest. And he's back with me, Davin Warner from Simply Privacy. Welcome, Davin.
Kia ora. Thanks, Phil. Good to be here.
Davin is a principal and director at Simply Privacy here in Auckland, New Zealand. They're also partners with us at Omidly. And at Omidly, we bring a privacy-focused product to market, which helps people deal with privacy, what we call privacy readiness. So laying a really important foundation for privacy work. And so Simply Privacy partners with us on that. Devin's an all-round privacy genius. He probably doesn't like to call himself that. A really great guy.
I love to.
And he has a depth of knowledge on privacy that I think is, I haven't really come across with too many people before. So really, really nice to have him on the show again. And we're going to talk today a wee bit about GDPR. And some of the confusion still that reigns around that, what that means for you as a business trying to go beyond perhaps New Zealand and into the world. And we're going to talk a little bit about some topical events that have been in the news in the last couple of days, specifically around the Australian privacy legislation that's coming through, where the fines are significantly increasing for breaches, and also about Meta's latest privacy breach, GDPR fine that they've had as well. So lots to talk about, lots to dive into. We hope you find this really useful. Like I say, this is going to be syndicated onto YouTube and onto podcast platforms or wherever you may be and wherever you get your podcasts. The podcast is called Upwards. Look for it on Spotify or wherever you download those. Please like and subscribe, follow us along. We've done 12 initial episodes and next year we'll plan to do another 12. We'll be bringing on some great guests talking all about security, privacy, startups, and in general leadership type topics to keep us all interested and informed. So please do that and let's get stuck into it. Davin, how are you, sir?
I am well, thanks. Yeah, good to be here again. I love these chats.
Very good. It's December. We're almost at the end of the year. It's not quite December yet. It's 30th November. I'm jumping the gun a little bit. So last one for the year. Let's dive into GDPR, because I've been speaking to quite a few people recently and it's been around for a few years now. The legislation is something like 3 or 4 years old at least. A lot of people are still seeking advice. And how do we do GDPR? Mm. What does it mean for me? You know, I'm a New Zealand business, or perhaps I'm operating in a couple of parts of the world already, but I haven't ventured so much into Europe. What does that mean for me? And how do I know that I'm actually obligated to do it? Because I might have one customer in Europe, or I might be operating entirely in Europe. And sometimes there's a bit of a difference between those two. Could you help us elaborate a little bit more on that? I know that's kind of a big introduction, but...
No, that's all right. So, yeah, I mean, GDPR was kind of one of the first overseas privacy laws throughout this kind of frightening concept of territorial scope, which means the scope of the way that the law applies to organizations based on both where they are and also what they're doing. And those are the really important questions. So, the way that the law works is it looks at two different categories. There's the establishment category, and then there's the targeting category. So to be subject to be covered by the establishment category, basically an organization needs to have some form of lawful establishment in the EU. And the interesting thing is that doesn't just mean, you know, that you've got a registered office in London or, well, no longer in London, of course, but a registered office in Paris or Dublin, you know, with a bunch of staff and a you know, premises and all that kind of thing. It can be something as small as having one employee based in that, provided that employee is operating kind of activities that relate to people in the EU. So that's one category. If the organization has an establishment in the EU, then everything it does is subject to the GDPR. But what's going to be more common is where an organization doesn't have an establishment in the EU, but might be caught by the targeting provisions. And there are two different types of targeting provisions. But the first thing you need to decide is, am I doing something in relation to people in the EU? And this is one of the biggest misunderstandings with GDPR. You hear a lot of people talk about the fact that the GDPR relates to personal information about citizens of the EU or residents of the EU. That's not relevant at all. All it applies to is the target is the collection and use of personal information about people while they're in the EU. So the only criteria you're looking at is the location of the data subject or the person that you're doing business with. It's the location that matters, not their legal status. So first step is, are the people located in the EU? And then if they are, you need to look at whether what you're doing with their data falls into one of two categories. The first is that you're offering goods and services to those people. Now that requires an element of intentional targeting. So, you know, just because you offer goods and services that you don't sort of restrict geographically, but you're say, for example, you're targeting really Asia and the Pacific, but people could, if they wanted, approach you via the internet and ask for your services from France or Germany. That probably wouldn't be enough to qualify you as offering goods and services to people in the EU. So that's one way you can be caught. The other way that you can be caught, and this is a little broader and a little more frightening, is if you're monitoring the behavior of people in the EU. And by the way, that monitoring of behavior has to take place in the EU too. So in other words, the person has to be displaying this behavior from the EU. Okay. Now that one's really broad. So there's some things that, you know, you can sort of imagine it might cover. Things like tracking someone's location so that you can target advertising to them while they're in the EU, or collecting data from their wearables about their health status while they're in the EU. That's really clear. But the ones that start getting people slightly frightened are things like cookies. You know, basically every website in the world does some form of monitoring of people's behavior. Now, if you've got a website that's accessible from Europe, that may mean that even if you're not remotely interested in European people in Europe or business in Europe, if people come to your website, then you've started monitoring their behavior. And the problem with this second limb is that it doesn't, like, unlike the first offering goods and services, this second monitoring of behavior doesn't require any intentional targeting. So there's no, you don't have to be, you can't get out of this monitoring scope by saying, well, we're not interested in people in the EU. So this one's a bit more broad. And this is really the one that really sort of gets people's attention because everyone has a website, everyone does marketing activities. Now, my view there would be that you take a risk-based approach. If your business in New Zealand is not remotely interested in the EU, and it's unlikely to attract any interest from people in the EU, then it's very unlikely that you're going to come to the attention of an EU regulatory authority or fall foul of the GDPR. So you got to take a risk-based approach here. But if you're offering services that are, you know, you may not be targeting EU, but they're incredibly attractive to anyone in the EU, and you've already noticed that you've got like a, you know, a 20% market share of the EU, then you should start thinking about, at least in respect to your activities on that website or in relation to those monitoring activities, we might need to start thinking about complying with GDPR. Have I made it clearer or have I made it murkier?
I think this is why there's often a wee bit of confusion around this. So you're saying, you know, if I happen to have some EU customers, but I'm not specifically targeting them, you know, I'm not running advertising campaigns in European, pricing in European dollars and running really specific targeted campaigns, that may not qualify me enough to be in scope. But then if I have those customers, I'm monitoring certain, you know, significant amounts of personal information, then that sort of pulls me back towards being in scope in that sense, which is what a lot of applications do. I mean, I'm thinking particularly from the product world in terms of, you know, running a web application, running a SaaS business, for example, you're often collecting personal information just by the nature of having people, you know, log in and use your product. So they're starting to leave a digital footprint in terms of personal information. Perhaps it's, you know, logins, emails, addresses, IP addresses, first name, last names, et cetera, et cetera. You're saying that if I've got a significant body of that data built up in my platform for people located in the EU, that's leaning more towards being in scope.
It's a risk.
It's a risk.
And, well, to be probably more clear, Phil, would be that you're in scope because of it, but the risk is higher if you've actually got a lot of interest from the EU.
And talk a little bit about data processing as well, because I know one of the other sort of checks for in scope is if you're processing a lot of data on behalf of, say, another business, and that data happens to be data that is about EU residents, that's another check, right? Another risk.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. So if you're offering, you know, and I guess the most common one would be a SaaS, a company that offers a SaaS product that they, in which they host and process the data on behalf of the customer. So here, when I say customer, I'm talking about the controller. So this is the yeah. business.
So someone has control over there. You said they're processing it.
You're processing it. Yeah, yeah. And so in that case, if your customer, the controller, is located in the EU, then you're subject as a processor to the GDPR fully. And even if your customer is located, say, in Singapore or the US, but it has EU customers, then you are still subject to the GDPR because your customer is still subject to the GDPR. So it doesn't actually matter where the location of your customer is. What matters is, what is your customer doing? Are they, if they're a controller of EU data, then you're subject to the GDPR. And I just wanted to jump back. So one thing to clarify, a lot of people come to us and say, all right, so we offer solely New Zealand-based services. For example, a news app, we've developed a news app. We're only interested in reporting on New Zealand news events. Our customers have to use a New Zealand mobile number to register, but they go to the EU and they travel around France, Germany, and Switzerland. Not Switzerland. I keep on saying countries that aren't in the EU, France, Germany, and the Netherlands. They're on a cycle tour for 3 months and they're using our news app the whole time they're there. Does that mean we're subject to GDPR? And the answer there is no, because you're not intentionally targeting people in the EU. Your customer base is in New Zealand, and just a sort of a transient passage of customers through the EU isn't enough to bring you in scope. So it's just probably worth noting that.
Right. So I don't put one, you know, I don't step over the line and 1 foot in the EU and suddenly, you know, suddenly the app is falls into scope. It's not quite that clear cut.
No, it's, yeah, exactly.
That's a relief. I'm sure quite a few businesses that may be worrying about that in particular. Okay. So it's not super clear, is it? I mean, it's a test, and it's not necessarily...
No, it's not.
And it's not necessarily like a hard line. I mean, there are some things which are absolutely, there's no doubt you are in scope, like that's very, very clear. Other things we're saying, it's a little bit more of a like a risk continuum. And so it's a judgment call.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, it's worth noting that just because an aspect of your business activities are caught by the GDPR doesn't mean all of your business activities are. So say, for example, you do offer goods and services to people in the EU. It's the GDPR will only apply to the processing of data about those people in the EU. It doesn't mean that you've got to offer the same level of compliance for all your customers outside of the EU. So it is actually based only on those activities. It doesn't catch your entire operation. Although in practice, it's usually easier for an organization to lift everything they do to one standard. Otherwise, you've got kind of different business processes for different people, which is really complicated.
Really complicated. So it makes sense probably to keep it the same. And look, GDPR is not necessarily a bad thing talk about the privacy foundations that go with that. So at Onwardly, we help quite a few people lay really important privacy foundations, which really underpin things like GDPR and other privacy frameworks around the world as well. Those aren't necessarily bad things to implement anyway, right? And even if you aren't quite fully in scope yet or you don't think you are, it's not a bad idea to actually implement those, just because I think for a couple of reasons, you may end up operating in the GDPR, you know, under scope anyway. So it's good to be prepared for that. A lot of it is just the right thing to do by people's data anyway. You know, these are foundational things that we should be doing, and people are more and more expecting to be done. I think people are expecting that their data to be kept private, to be understood, to be forgotten, to have, you know, all those things that we talk about. They're expecting that now more and more from an end user perspective anyway. And also, you know, there's increasingly penalties for getting this wrong as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really well put, Phil. I mean, the GDPR, like all privacy laws, is based on the same foundational principles that were developed in the 1980s. We call them kind of the fair information principles. In New Zealand, they're called the information privacy principles. In Australia, they're called the Australian privacy principles, because they like to put the word Australian in front of everything, even though they're in Australia. So I've never understood that. But they're all the same principles. And they're, you know, they come down to things like data minimization, transparency, use limitation, only use it for the purposes you collected it, security, accuracy, you know, and then rights like access and correction and things. So I mean, it's all very much the same. And the GDPR, where the GDPR really differs is in its level of accountability. So it has all these requirements around accountability that other privacy laws like New Zealand's Privacy Act don't contain explicitly. but they are best practice. And more regulators are expecting agencies to do the same thing in New Zealand as they would be under the GDPR anyway. Things like doing privacy impact assessments when you're doing, you know, big projects, keeping a record of the way you process personal information, data mapping, data inventories. These are all things that are mandated by GDPR, but are voluntary in New Zealand. But I think every agency should be doing them anyway, because they're just best practice.
Indeed, indeed. Speaking of accountability, just across the ditch here, there's been some news this week out of Australia. They have some legislation, I think, passing almost, you know, going through the final readings and confirmations in Australia around some significant increases in penalties for privacy breaches. This is obviously, you know, considerably more than was previous. I think the penalty is now up to something like $50 million for a significant breach. Can you talk to a little bit about, you know, what that means and you know, where, how that fits into the context of the trends that we're seeing in the privacy space?
Yeah, sure. And it is a trend. You're absolutely right. There's what we're seeing is this continuous, what we call GDPRization, where every country is sort of lifting their standards eventually to GDPR levels. And so Australia, the Privacy Act, it's always been a bit better or worse, depending on your viewpoint. In terms of fines, it used to be 2.5 million for a serious or repeated interference. And as you say, that's now lifted to 50 million, which is actually a phenomenal change. And it's much higher than the GDPR, which I find really surprising. Now, there's actually a three-phase approach to the fines in Australia, which is really interesting. So it's the greater of either 50 million or three times the value that the agency has derived from the misuse of data, which I think is really cool. So you call this kind of data monetization. So what they're saying is, if you've breached the Privacy Act, we're going to ask for three times the dollars you made as a result of that terrible activity, which I think is kind of cool. It's a really direct sort of slap on the hand for what you did with that data. And if you can't work out what that value is, then the third option is 30% of your quarterly adjusted turnover, which could be pretty high too. But, you know, obviously it's going to be, you know, depends on the size of the business, of course. So if something like Facebook, it could be absolutely huge. But for most organizations in New Zealand and Australia, you're probably still looking at that $50 million cap, which will be, you know, the greater. So, it should, you know, but still, these are significant fines. Now, it's worth noting as well that they relate to what they define as serious or systemic, serious or repeated interferences with privacy. So you're not going to get fines of that size for a one-off event. You know, you won't get fines that size for, you know, an individual making a complaint about something that happened. These are reserved for the really big, big ticket issues. But what it does mean, and the other important thing is that the privacy bill has, so to be clear, the privacy law reform in Australia is a lot, and it's an ongoing process. This isn't the end of it. These fines have come into, essentially been established yesterday by this privacy bill that's now been passed. So this is happening, the fines part. Then there's going to be more reform next year where other changes to the Privacy Act will make it more similar to the GDPR. Things like there's a curious kind of exemption in Australian Privacy Act for employee data. There's also an exemption relating to small businesses. So if your global annual turnover is lower than $3 million Australian dollars, you're not covered by the Privacy Act, which is kind of weird. So all of these things are likely to be removed next year, plus a number of other things coming in. So this is just step one, this bill, which is the bigger fines. But also it's the other thing I was just going to mention is it's clarified the sort of territorial scope, just like we were talking about with GDPR. It's making it much more simple for the Privacy Commissioner in Australia to assert jurisdiction over an organization in New Zealand, for example. And essentially it's the same as the New Zealand Privacy Act, which is if you carry on business in Australia, that's all you need and you're in, you're covered. So it's sort of making it even easier, I suppose, for the Privacy Commissioner in Australia to issue a fine against a New Zealand organization as well. So that kind of comes hand in hand with the higher fines. So it's an interesting process. And it's certainly going to impact on New Zealand organizations.
I think it, no doubt it will. I wouldn't be surprised if we started to see eventual legislation changes over here to follow suit potentially. I know we just did a big update 2020, but the stuff's moving quite fast, and I wouldn't be surprised over the next few years to see some updates to that. It's good to know that, you know, we just need to be mindful as New Zealand businesses. It's not very common to do a business in Australia as our kind of next port of call. You know, they're accessible, they're reasonably close by, you know, culturally relatively similar. You know, we can sell product into Australia, and this is something to be very, very mindful of. So even another reason to get your Privacy Act in order. Get ready, make sure you have good foundations here and that you're not making mistakes in your business, because it's a lot harder to fix once you're a little bit further established and bigger than it is when you're relatively yep. small. So I think that's yep. kind of one of the key takeaways, is get this stuff integrated into your business from the get-go, from as soon as possible, and then you'll be in a good place to scale that as you go.
Yeah, and look, a lot of the, you're right, Phil, and a lot of the tools, you know, Onwardly being an example, they relate to accountability, right? So this is the thing I was talking about with GDPR. We don't have it in our law, but most of the activities that a privacy officer needs to complete as part of their privacy program aren't really about, are we complying with Principle 1 or Principle 8? They're about, do we have robust accountability mechanisms in place to make sure we have sustainable compliance? So that includes, do we have a proper operating model with a privacy officer and a, you know, clear lines of responsibility and escalation? Do we have record of processing? Do we have the right policies and procedures in place? Do we have a privacy impact assessment process? These are all things that aren't actually specifically mandated by the New Zealand Privacy Act, but if you do them right, they'll cover you for GDPR, for China's privacy impact, personal information protection law, Australia's Privacy Act. Regardless of what the law actually requires of you from a principal's perspective, these activities are critical to manage sustainable compliance. It's just that the bits you deal with inside your policy might be slightly different based on which jurisdictions that you're operating in, but you still need all the same foundational things in place.
And much like security, it's not a one and done thing. It's not, I have a policy or I have this, I'm good to go. Mm. It's some of that, but it's also a way of working, isn't it, inside the business that has to be long term and it has to be followed, otherwise it doesn't work. You're fooling yourself. That's the important takeaway as well. If you're thinking I've got a privacy policy, I'm good to go, then it's a lot more than that. And it requires a real work, cross-functional work within the business to ensure that, like you said, you know where data is living, you have people in roles who are thinking about that or looking after that or representing that at a business level. And it's not super hard to achieve. It's just doing the things consistently and having something to help you do that.
That's it. A good example of that, Phil, just quickly. Sorry, a good example of that is privacy transparency. So we really believe in this concept at Simply Privacy of trusted transparency, which is really different because, you know, so many times you see people, organizations will throw up a kind of boilerplate privacy statement that they've copied from some other organization online because they thought it looked good. That's not trusted transparency. That's just, you know, kind of masking or a band-aid over a real issue. For trusted transparency, you need to ensure that what you're saying is true, number one, because if you don't, that you could actually be falling into breach of other laws like fair trading laws, because you're giving misleading statements to customers about what you're going to do with their personal information. So there's other kind of legal risks with a bad privacy statement. But also, you need to be continuously looping back with the business to make sure that processes haven't changed in the say the last 12 months, such that your privacy statement is no longer accurate. And that's a big risk. And so people don't check their privacy statements for 5 years. That's not a trusted privacy statement. That's just a useless document that means nothing. And so you need to have processes to continuously revise and refresh your privacy transparency documents.
Indeed. And doing that, doing that regularly, making sure those are up to date. It's not that hard. It's just doing it on a really consistent basis and making sure those are accurate. It's a really, really, really good takeaway. Many people probably have set a privacy policy up 5 years ago and never touched it, never looked at it since. And it's sitting there potentially misleading people about what's really going on. So keep those up to date. It's a takeaway. Lastly, last bit of news we wanted to cover here is the Facebook GDPR breach. A little bit in the news the last couple of days. I think they were fined something like $275 to $285 million by the GDPR. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I love this one because not only is it Meta, which is a company people love to hate, but also the decision was issued by the Irish Data Protection Commission. So it's kind of close to home for me. And it's partly because, you know, a lot of these big tech companies have their offices in Dublin. So the Irish Data Protection Commission takes jurisdiction over some of these big tech companies. So she gets to issue some pretty high, hefty, high-level decisions. So yeah, this one's really interesting. And so it's 265 million euros. 65. And I think that might be around $400,000 or $500,000, which is, sorry, $400,000 or $500,000 in New Zealand dollars, which is, unless my maths is wrong, that's half a billion. Am I right, Phil?
That's yep.
So that's,
I bet.
That's a lot of money, right? I mean, that's all, you know, we always say these fines are a drop in the ocean for people like Meta or Google or whoever, but half a billion dollars feels like more like a rock in the ocean rather than just a pebble. I mean, it's starting to make some more significant waves. So this, and this decision was really interesting because it comes back to this point I made about how GDPR includes obligations that are only best practice in other countries, but are actually mandated by law in the GDPR. And one of those is privacy by design. So this is the concept that you should be designing your technology, your systems, your processes to create privacy outcomes by default. The idea that you should think about things like data minimization, use limitation, fairness, transparency, and actually design them into your products. And that's in GDPR terms, that's called data protection by design, because they don't use the word privacy. And so privacy by design is a best practice thing. And what happened here is that Meta was essentially data scraping. They took huge data sets of information about individuals from various of their products and made them available online. And the Data Protection Commission in Ireland said, you clearly had zero consideration of privacy by design when you decided to do these things, when you created your tech to enable these things. And that's a significant accountability and privacy design issue. And so this is one of the biggest fines we've seen yet under GDPR, you know, and it wasn't for some sort of disclosure. It wasn't for a security issue. It was for something entirely in the control of the organization that they should have done better. And so from that perspective, I think it's a incredibly interesting decision.
Yeah, and it's interesting that people may not fully realize, but it's up to the individual, you know, agencies within the EU to issue these fines, isn't it? So it might be the Irish version, and it could be in another country as well, right? It doesn't just come from quote unquote the EU, it comes from a specific region within that, right?
Yeah, but just to note on that, one thing they try and do is they cooperate. So the GDPR creates a mechanism for the authorities to cooperate. So in this case, you know, the Irish Data Protection Commission will have talked to a bunch of other commissions who were interested and said, hey, I'm going to do this, guys, what do you reckon? And they would have said, sounds good, you do you. And so she would have done that. And so they will have supported it. And so there's a thing in the EU called the one-stop-shop mechanism, which is basically saying we can't have sort of five authorities issuing the same decision against an organization, right. Not, you know, for example, based on a complaint or a breach. And so generally, it'll be one organization that will take the lead, and they may have cooperation from others, but it'll come from one of the authorities.
Right.
And that's what happened here. All the other authorities said, yay, Ireland, you do it.
You do it. Yeah, yeah, indeed. Yeah. It's huge. Well, look, it is a reminder to us all that privacy has to be done by design. And you know, there are mistakes that are made sometimes. People email the wrong spreadsheet of something. It's not necessarily about that. It's about the intentional design process you go through when dealing with people's data and looking after that and taking a specific view on that and implementing the right principles associated with that. So a really important reminder. A lot of the stuff happening in the news at the moment, I think, probably going to see more. It relates pretty closely to security. You know, security is about protecting people's data as well. So, you know, just a reminder that if you need help with security and privacy, Omelie is a platform which helps startup companies and more established companies as well become cyber and privacy ready. So we have all the policies, templates, everything you need to get set up and do this stuff well. You don't have to figure it all out yourself. We can help you do that. And get up and running and be in a really good place to do the right thing by people's data and to be practicing universal principles when it comes to privacy and security.
Nice. I'm really excited about that privacy side of it.
Yeah, indeed. And we're seeing some people do this really successfully already that don't necessarily have expertise in this area. So if you think this all feels a bit too hard, then come and see us. Oh, look, Devin, it's been great to have you on the show again, last show of the year. Appreciate your insight into this whole area. Sometimes can be a bit confusing, but it's really great to have somebody on that makes it more accessible and understandable for us. So appreciate your time and insight into this once again. Thanks very much.
Kia ora, Phil, and Merry Christmas to you and everybody.
Yeah, indeed. And thank you. You too. And have a great break, everybody. If you're listening from the Southern Hemisphere, we typically you'll have a summer holiday. If you're in the Northern Hemisphere, then it'll be getting colder and colder for you. So have a good break wherever you are, and listen to this. You can catch us on the podcasts and on YouTube as well. And we'll come back with some fresh episodes next year. Thanks, everybody. If you have a question or comment, please leave it wherever you're listening to this, and we'll endeavor to get back to you. We'd love to hear from you. Please do that. Thanks very much.
This is Upwards, the podcast for security and tech leaders, brought to you by Onwardly. Don't forget to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts, and join us again next time for more on security, startups, and leadership.